Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
Well, Jonathan, Dr. Jonathan Beattie is our next guest, and he is a naturopathic physician residing in Ontario and a frequent contributor to the Health First Show. Dr. Beattie, welcome.
Thanks for having me back again, Dave. It's always great to be here.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about, some of the issues that you're seeing coming through your clinic right now.
Well, probably the biggest one is one of those areas that's often overlooked, and the fun technical term I get to call it is iatrogenic disease, or it's what we call doctor-induced illness, which is often a lot of interactions either, with medications people are taking and supplements they're taking, or a lot of just basically nutrient deficiencies from the prescription medications the patients are on.
So how common are it's almost like an overdose, isn't it? When we're having a drug interaction, is it?
Yeah, term we like to use are adverse events. I know a lot of patients call them side effects, and a lot of doctors refer to these things as side effects, but I'm not a big fan of the term because it makes it sound as if it's something we don't expect. It's something, accidental, when in actuality, usually the adverse effect of a medication is, based on exactly how the drug or the drug works. And so they're actually incredibly common, especially when you start mixing more than one medication together. For instance, if you take three drugs, you have about a 60% chance that your medications are interacting, whereas when you get onto six prescription medications, there's a 100% chance of interaction between the medicines. So that's where it does become quite problematic. And most of the very common medicines are the ones that actually have some of the biggest interactions or adverse effects.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you two questions. The first question is, do we have any idea what the average Canadian, how many drugs the average Canadian senior is taking, for example?
If we want to get into average, I would say the average senior citizen is taking at least one prescription medication a day. When we get into average person, I mean, there are some people over the age of 60 that, have dodged that bullet and aren't taking any. And then, there are quite a number of people that take multiple medications a day. So when we get into the sort of drug usage, you're looking at quite large numbers of people using these medications. And even a single drug, although they may not obviously have an interaction with another medication, they can cause a lot of adverse effects, even a single medication.
What are some of the most common drugs that people are having reactions to?
It's weird. Some of the most common are actually your over-the-counter medications. Mm-hmm. These are the ones that most people, of course, view as being very safe. These are the things that we look at, hey, I've got a little headache today, so I'm going to, pop a, well, I can't use the trade name, but we'll call it acetylsalicylic acid, the stuff that most people know as your sort of headache tablet. And that medication, ASA, it actually causes intestinal bleeding. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those weird ones where not a lot of people think of it for adverse events, but it does cause a lot of ulcers. And it actually kills more people in North America every year than HIV and AIDS do. So when we start looking at some of the simple medications, that's a big one. And acetaminophen, which is another common painkiller used, it's actually one of the most liver toxic medications we know of, and it's the number one cause of drug induced liver failure in North America. It actually, they estimate, it causes more liver failure than all other medications combined.
Wow. And I was going to ask you in terms of do we have any idea of how many people are reporting these drug interactions or these drug side effects every year?
Well, we do have certain ideas. I mean, Health Canada does have a reporting system put into place so that if you do have a medication interaction, it should be reported. Unfortunately, and the estimates vary widely in this area, it's incredibly underreported. And that's because people, you know, most people who have a reaction to a medication don't know that it's basically their responsibility to go online and file that interaction, or in some cases the doctor who treats it or the hospital that treats it are supposed to file it. But if you have more than one person treating it, you know, they may just assume that the other person's going to do it. And so a lot of the time, you know, medication adverse events do get underreported. And a lot of the times, again, they're not properly diagnosed, which is, again, you know, what a large portion of my practice is, actually just treating people for medication side effects.
Well, you know, you're a naturopathic physician and you work in the realm of, you know, natural products. What are the side effects of, you know, or do we have a lot of side effects associated with herbal or vitamin products?
Yes, there are. They do tend to be slightly fewer. I mean, to date, I don't believe there is a death attributed to natural health products or natural health product use in Canada, which is a pretty remarkable feat considering the amount of people that do use them. But again, even most natural things that are dangerous are still relatively restricted. But what most people don't realize is that 95% of even pharmaceuticals are sort of plant derived. And there are ways, for instance, you know, if you want to get, you can buy ASA at the store, at the pharmacy, but on the flip side, you can get it as it's actually extracted from white willow bark. Although when you use that extract, it seems to cause less ulceration and less damage to the intestine. But there are a number of, more in the herbal medicines, a number of medicines that can be harmful. But again, as I mentioned, it tends to be a lot less than when using the pharmaceutical or concentrated derivatives. Although it is possible. And again, the same thing, you know, a little iron might be very beneficial to somebody with an iron deficiency. However, if somebody has adequate iron intake, if they were to overdose themselves, on the flip side, they can cause themselves a lot of harm. So there is kind of a golden mean for dosing when it comes to supplements or nutrients or herbs.
What do we need to know if we're taking prescription drugs that our doctor's given us and, you know, we want to take some from the health food store?
Well, we really should check for interactions with things like that. There are a number of different medications that can interfere with the absorption or utilization of nutrients. And there are a lot of nutrients that can actually interfere with the absorption and the utilization of a drug. So in some cases, a nutrient might, you know, speed up or increase the activity of a medication, which can be beneficial. But if somebody's already at a very high dose, it could also be harm-inducing. So usually what I have people do is, or recommend people do, if they're not seeing something like somebody like a naturopath, definitely check with the pharmacist, definitely check with your doctors. The unfortunate part here is most of them aren't very well trained in this. And so what I often actually have people do is go to websites. There's a great one out there called MyTavin. It's MyTavin.com. And it actually lets you put all of your medications that you take into a website. And then it'll actually print or give you a readout of what nutrients those medications create deficiencies of. And the best thing I like about this website is it also has the references. So it actually links you to the scientific articles that show that medication creates that deficiency. So this way the patient can go back into their doctor, not only armed with a list of what nutrients they're thinking about taking, but also with a scientific justification for why those would be important to that person.
Mm. And, you know, what are some of the common deficiencies that are caused by maybe some of the common medications?
Yeah, well, it does come down medication to medication. But with that, I mean, some of the big ones that we start to see, especially when we go into the common medications used, antibiotics, for instance, because they're not specific and they can kill a lot of our healthy bacteria, or what we often refer to in swallowing pills as probiotics, because they can destroy our probiotics, they pretty much interfere with the digestion and absorption of almost all minerals, as well as most of your B vitamins. So those, you know, anybody on an antibiotic often needs to supplement at least temporarily just to ensure that they're getting adequate nutrition, as their digestion can be impaired by those medications. Female hormones, that's another, whether it's the birth control pill that younger women are using, or we start to get into the hormone replacement therapies that that older women are using, you start to see a lot of impairments with, you know, your B12, your folic acid, and magnesium levels as well. And so those big, those three tend to be big nutrient deficiencies that hormones can deplete. So there's, you know, a lot of different medications. And then the other big one, big class of drugs is antidepressants and anti-anxiety meds, or what are known as anxiolytics. And they can actually decrease your coenzyme Q10, which is needed for a healthy heart. They can decrease your B12, which is, again, needed for energy generation and proper blood formation and nerve formation. And melatonin is also interfered with by these medications, which is needed for a good night's sleep. So as you can imagine, you know, if somebody's depressed and anxious, if they're not sleeping well, it's not, you know, not going to help them very much. If their melatonin production is impaired, you know, typically when you see somebody who's depressed, they're not exactly that individual who tends to be full of energy. And that can sometimes be because the medications deplete CoQ10 and B12, which the human body actually needs to create that that medication. And interestingly, when you give these people B vitamins, it's actually been shown to show that the antidepressants work better. So when you alleviate some of these nutrient deficits, you can actually improve the effectiveness of their medications as well.
So people, so what you're saying, what I hear you saying, doctor, is that people that are on antidepressants should be taking B vitamins as well as their antidepressant.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it just it helps prevent the risk of a deficiency from that medication, and it can actually increase the effectiveness of it. And it's a very safe pairing to make. So this is one that I've always been a big fan of. B vitamins, although individual B vitamins at very, very high doses can be toxic, you'll never find those levels in a B-complex vitamin. So I often, anybody I see who comes in who's on a medication for anxiety or a medication for depression, I will often put them on a B vitamin almost 100% of the time to help those medications to work, to help alleviate that person's symptoms. Mm.
Should people be aware of anything else when they're taking antidepressants?
Well, there's a number of things that people should be concerned with when they're taking antidepressants. You know, when we start to look at, you know, how these, some of these medications can interfere with herbs. So, for instance, some of the common antidepressant herbs that people use are actually just as problematic or cause problems with the antidepressants. So St. John's wort is a very, very, very common antidepressant herb. It's actually the number one antidepressant prescribed in Germany. However, it can actually change the metabolism of antidepressant drugs and can actually make make some of those problems or actually make those drugs not work as well, or in some cases make them work too quickly and they can actually become harmful.
What about people that want to come off medication like an antidepressant and use a natural product? Is there any, what do they have to do in that case?
Well, a case like that, which would be, you know, a little bit more complex than your average, if somebody did want to come off of an antidepressant and try to go the natural way, I would recommend definitely doing that with the help of a professional, just to ensure that they're getting the right support to help treat their depression and that they're coming off the medications appropriately. The worst thing somebody can probably do with an antidepressant is to stop suddenly, and that can actually cause some a very serious condition called serotonin syndrome, where the body kind of rebounds from not having the medication. And what happens with medications over time is the body actually becomes sort of adapted to having them. So it gets used to having this medication, having that medication's effect on the body. And when you remove that, the body basically fails to remember how to work properly. And so you need to slowly reduce the dosage of the drug over time to prevent that from happening.
Now, Dr. Beattie, are there any medications, or is there, you know, now that we're talking about antidepressants, before somebody goes on an antidepressant, are there anything that they you would recommend that they try before they, you know, get an antidepressant?
I mean, obviously it depends somewhat on the level of illness the person has, but there's a lot of great research out there for fish oil. If we get into the sort of realm of depression, I'm in the school of what they call the inflammatory model of depression. Most medications for depression are all based on what I believe to be a pretty defunct and broken theory of depression, which is that people with depression have an imbalance in their neurotransmitters. However, the research has shown that the imbalance in neurotransmitters amongst people with depression is just as the levels or in the imbalances seen are the same as in the normal population or the non-depressed population. So the theory that there's an imbalance in neurotransmitters doesn't really pan out, and most of the medications are actually shown to be just about as good as placebo or taking a sugar pill. So this is where I always look at using something like fish oil, which is a very, very potent anti-inflammatory, helping to break down cerebral inflammation. And, you know, fish oil, what a lot of people don't realize is our brains are 60% fat. And a lot of people have been on low-fat diets for a very long time, basically creating a nutrient or fat deficiency in the brain. And of that fat, of that 60% of our brain that is fat, one-third of it is a fat called DHA, which is very common in fish oil. So if you have a deficiency in that, you know, you're really starting to interfere with the overall function of the entire brain. And I've seen very, very profound results and really remarkable results, but also lasting results with using fish oil in the management of depression.
We're talking with Dr. Jonathan Beattie. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be finding out more about your health and what you can do about it.